Coming back with Stevie Wonder and Sir Duke, a tribute to Duke Ellington. Stevie Wonder was a wunderkind, and we're talking to another wunderkind who was recruited by old man DuPont, as he says. And we are covering a lot of ground with Dr. Richard Allen Miller. I warned you we would. When we come back, I want to get his take on an article I've been reading recently about the creation of super soldiers, Iron Man, Terminator robots to fight future wars. And it warns that the wars of the future are very likely going to resemble many of the science fiction movies that we're watching right now. The U.S. military is in a global race to create the technologies of the future. And some of the things that they're coming up with are disturbing, to say the least, according to Michael Snyder, writing for a website called thetruthwins.com. Have you enjoyed watching the Iron Man movies that have come out in recent years? Tens of millions of Americans have flocked to see those films, and now they're being used as inspiration to create a new generation of exoskeletons for U.S. soldiers. In fact, it's being reported that this revolutionary new smart armor was specifically inspired by Tony Stark's legendary nano suit used in the Iron Man movies. This armor is currently being developed at MIT, and according to the BBC, this armor will give U.S. troops superhuman strength. We'll talk about super soldiers when we continue. And my conversation with Dr. Richard Allen Miller right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't go away. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett along with Dr. Richard Allen Miller. Rick, I mentioned before the break this article I've been reading on thetruthwins.com by Michael Snyder, and warning about some point in the not-too-distant future where Americans or U.S. defense industry will be churning out American soldiers that have been genetically modified to perform superhuman feats of strength, run at superhuman speeds, even regrow limbs. And I suppose we could add to that list, if what you're saying is true, these would also be psychic soldiers. Have we already arrived at the future in terms of American super soldiers?
That and beyond. That's that NASA document. By the way, I apologize for the last hour because that's what a cup of coffee does at 11 o'clock at night.
No apology necessary. I was anticipating a wild ride and you delivered.
But I'll try to simmer it down and stay more focused now to your questions because they're important ones. That this today, NASA has accurately so far predicted almost everything. They discussed geoengineering in this you know, future weapons of war, that war after next. And it's accurate. Now, actually, every 20 years, NASA, that's just like in the movie Interstellar, is the one running the show. And there's something else going on. I don't know what it is. I probably will never know in my lifetime. Who knows how it will be written in history? But right now, the United States is the biggest bully in world history. And I'm ashamed in terms of the kinds of laws that they're trying to pass with the United Nations, where they can take now our Second Amendment away from us because we're a second or third world country now.
What about these super soldiers, though, Rick? What is the status
of today? Have technologies that I'm not even aware of. Back in the early 70s, I trained SEAL units 1 through 3, some astronauts, and a few others through our laboratories. We had Menninger Foundation, and we had several other places where we would train to how to be interrogated, how to interrogate, how to be paranormal in your boxing abilities, you know, with what you call kung fu. Kung fu, by the way, means excellence. It's that you have kung fu as a ballet dancer. What we did was use toys to advance development of awareness of body functions and things like that with biofeedback. Brain drivers to reset or what they call bifurcation on the brain, where it sets up a certain way the brain works, which is more efficient than the way you were birthed. Once you had that, then of course it became, you could train them how to be beefier and tougher and blow up bridges. What we wanted for the first team was intuition. If they could make critical decision-making abilities, then we could train almost anything else. So the first actual start of a so-called super soldier was to measure intuition and the ability to make correct decisions in a time of crisis.
And I got to know... Russell Targ a little bit at of the Stanford Research Institute, and of course his investigations into ESP, but also remote viewing, and he will swear up and down that they achieved great success. He and people like Hal Puthoff and others, but the U.S. Defense Department said they kiboshed that program because it wasn't working.
That's like the army and ministry goats. There's this, and then there's that. And astral projection is not remote viewing. And there is a zine on the internet called Emergent Mind Bulletin. It is edited by Lynn Sidorov. She's a Russian. And individuals like Maddie Pitkinen and Alex Kavarinen actually did actual studies on the difference between remote viewing and astral projection. Now, remote viewing is a PK phenomenon, which means that, in fact, what's really happening is that you are allowing something to watch you. And in doing so, you see things. And astral projection is kind of like more like Shirley MacLaine, where it's coming from the inside of you, and you're going out in consciousness somewhere to physically get information that's at another location. There's always a cord. Monroe talked about that, journeys out of the body, that kind of thing. Now, Puthoff and Targ were in the early 80s. I was in the early 70s. And so what we were doing, it was working with some Czech work, Dr. Milan Riesel. During that period, we knew about aliens, but we were way more worried about what the Russians were doing. And while the Russians were superstitious back then, they had Kalugina and all this weird stuff going on where she's moving objects with her mind on the table. In fact, the Czechs had some excellent, excellent research in cosmobiology and extrasensory perception. And what they did is they associated ESP with thinking with the gut. Now, that's your enteric nervous system, which is your first brain. And before anything starts happening in your logic brain, the upper brain, that means that the body has several brains going on. And the first one, is the one in your gut, is actually outside space and time. It's called instinct and survival codes dealing with the spirit. And spirit is the thread of who you are and who you will be. And so there is a understanding there that we don't quite understand. The fact that remote viewing is outside the body and something is looking at you, in quantum mechanics, it is a theorem that bias will change. The observer will actually change what it's observing. And that means they're allowing something to change themselves, and then they sometimes enhance it with drugs to get a more stark imprint on what they might be sensing in their artwork or whatever way they're transcribing into consciousness.
Is there a connection, is there a connection between ESP and advanced propulsion systems such as that are used in perhaps UFOs, for example? Because a number of UFO researchers have hinted at that you have to understand what's at work with ESP before you can understand how UFOs or these discs are able to do what they do.
I haven't made that connection yet. Stay tuned on that. I kind of grok a little idea of what might be suggested there. I have not looked at it from that point of view yet, for my own studies, but I am understanding that anti-gravity machines, what they're doing is not anti-gravity. What they're doing is bending space, and gravity changes. Just like that marble on that latex, drum.
Right,
and
right.
The problem is that the tighter you can make that monopole, and you might be able to adjust it on a nanometer level, imagine that you can bend space-time to another galaxy, not just to Mars. Now, I knew about Stargates back in the 70s. We didn't have one. We couldn't find them. But we had a book called The Yazidis, devil worship. It was a pre-Christian devil worshiping cult that a Jesuit, Joseph Isaiah, wrote for the Vatican. And it talked about a door with a bunch of little demons that were running back and forth. Well, that's how parapsychology got started, and we started looking for artifacts, like the Ark of the Covenant, that kind of thing. We were looking for a Stargate. And I understand, I haven't seen it, but I understand they discovered the one that the first Bush went into Iraq to try to get and couldn't find. The second Bush had tomography, and they found it up in the northern part of Iraq in the territory that is inhabited by Yazidi. And it was in caverns, I think it was almost like 60 miles down into the earth.
So you're suggesting that the first Gulf War was not about Iraq invading Kuwait. There was an exopolitical motivation here, and that it was a race to find the Stargate, because I remember at the time Saddam Hussein had hired a team of German archaeologists, and they were digging in the desert. So this was a race to find the Stargate.
There's all kinds of artifacts that have been described in our history. You know, the Vajin, all kinds of different things, Chupacabra, Bigfoot. We don't know what any of that kind of stuff was. That's when they would discover something. I was part of a team that would try to go in and figure out what was going on. Mostly we never did. Now, here's the interesting part. Stargate, in the book I have, The Yazidi, suggests there's a second Stargate, just like in the movies. So I will say to you, if you want to know what's going to happen, follow Hollywood, because she would if she could.
Well, Marshall McLuhan said, we tell each other the truth through films and we lie to each other through television. So so Hollywood is I guess, telegraphing to us what these breakaway civilizations have at their disposal. So do they have, these unelected oligarchs or a cabal or whatever you want to call the people that run the show? Are you saying that they have time travel capabilities at their disposal?
Well, that's Umberto Eco in Foucault's Pendulum and the Comte Saint-Germain.
Is that a yes or a no?
The bloodlines of Christ, and it goes downhill from there. Who knows? I mean, there is so much. You know, Umberto Eco's Foucault's Pendulum talks about the Comte Saint-Germain, you know, Doctor Who. And he keeps showing up all kinds of places at the most inappropriate times. And it's interesting. I have a TARDIS. It actually is Autogen Biofeedback with Mora and Indemet. I have learned how to talk to specific neurotransmitters. And when you can dialogue with specific neurotransmitters, you now have a time machine.
Well, this is the subject of your book, Power Tools for the 21st Century. You want to take what you taught these super soldiers and teach it to everyday, ordinary Joes like myself. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, 40 years later, as a toward taking responsibility for your own evolvement, your evolution of consciousness. It's not going to, I waited for the rapture. It never came and got me. I had to go out and earn it. And that's how you do it, and that's how you teach your children how to do it. And while what we do might seem in conflict with each other, that part is God's will. What is in the new book I'm writing, The Non-Local Mind in a Holographic Universe, there is a chapter called The Stanford Argument. And at the University of Stanford, they have an argument on distinguishing the difference between intent and intentionality. Now, intent is what Aleister Crowley called true will. It what is what happens at the end of the day. At the end of the day, what actually happened? That is what should have happened. And what intentionality is when Maxwell Smart might say to Agent 99, missed it by that much. And, you know, that's the deal. The difference between what you actually do and what you wanted to do, but. Now, that's the part we talk about, internal landscape, and whether or not that glass is half full or it's half empty. In the one, you have just been given something, and in the other, you have lost something. Which one would be healthier?
Well, the power of intention, that's, you know, pretty powerful. a pretty powerful capability. So the power of intention. I mean, there have been experiments, again, going back to Stanford, the Stanford Research Institute, on the power of intention, and some might call that prayer.
You mean the holy water that kills vampires? Or, oh, wait, we do that at Grace when we bless our food. Yes. That's called the intention experiment.
Changing the crystalline nature of water. Changing the crystalline nature of water, for example.
Changing the structure of it. That is correct. You know, it's interesting to realize that the water and its register of information and the way it can organize data is 1 million times, that's six zeros, more efficient than our current solid-state physics chips of gallium arsenide, that kind of thing. Those are what they call forbidden zones, where you have the register that will go in with your not ors and ands and so on. And water is probably going to be our next form of computer. It is 1 million times more efficient than our current systems of information transfer. That's the information transfer direction that we're going. And while we're doing that, the nanotechnology part is where we put these kinds of structured waters inside other structures, and now we can do things we've never been able to do, called fusion.
Well, you mentioned we began the program talking about the dire situation in Japan with Fukushima.
Yes.
Do you hold out hope that through A, the power of intention, and B, nanotechnology, we might be able to reverse that situation and heal the planet in other ways?
John Lennon, love is all there is. There's different kinds of love, of course. But the idea of your nam or grace in that form of love. You know, the Greek had four words for love. There was eros, philo, agape, and telema, or thelema, the love of will, your purpose. That is, in my understandings of limited space, time, and all of that, that is what we're all supposed to be doing, is living our joy. It is a higher form of bliss. Bliss is what you achieve in certain meditative states. Following your joy is what you will eventually have as barter for your relationship to other people and the earth. That's why American Indians always saw themselves as stewards. They didn't own anything. They were just caretakers. And that was Chief Sealth in Seattle in 1857 when he said, how can man own the land he lives on? How can he own the air he breathes? We're only here for a brief moment. We're caretakers. Now, it is a way of being, and that is what everybody is starting to wake up to. It's really exciting because I'm watching it happen all around me now. As I'm speaking to people, they're getting it. And they're getting it and getting it to the point where they're teaching other people how to do it, and the children are watching.
When you say they're getting it, they're teaching other people to do it. Again, are you talking about the power of intention?
Yeah, like you are right now. Yes. That's what you're doing. Besides the radio part of it and all of the rest of it, you are now an active participant in that arena trying to spread the news. I don't know what ever happened to Watergate and why the media has gone downhill. Yes, I do. It's corporations that are 40 times larger in the United States itself. Oregon has a budget right now of $3.2 billion. A very, very small pharmaceutical house, Johnson & Johnson Wax, that's their quarterly statement. They're four times bigger.
Sure. Listen, we've got to take a time out, Rick. When we come back, we'll take some calls as well and continue down this path to everywhere, all at once. Dr. Rick Allen Miller, right here on Coast to Coast AM. My name is Richard Serrett. Don't go away. And this is LaGrange off ZZ Top's 1973 album entitled Tres Hombres. And it's one of their most successful songs. It's actually about a brothel on the outskirts of LaGrange, Texas, later called the Chicken Ranch. You may remember the Broadway play and film based on the Chicken Ranch. It was called The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas and starred Dolly Parton and Burt Reynolds. Well, that's, I guess, sort of the original inspiration right there, the ZZ Top hit LaGrange, Texas. We will get back to our wild and woolly conversation with Dr. Richard Allen Miller and your calls when Coast to Coast continues right after this. Physicist, biophysicist, herbalist, Renaissance man, Dr. Richard Allen Miller is with us. Rick, you ready to take some calls?
Yes, I am. And by the way, someone needs to compliment you on your choice in music.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You know, you just hit the nail for me, David Bowie. Get a grip. Thank you.
Yeah, I got to tell you, that's one of the
Roger.
one of the great treats of getting to host this show from time to time is to have a hand in picking the bumper music. So I do enjoy that. Let's kick things off on the wild card. No, let's go east of the Rockies. My apologies. East of the Rockies, and we'll begin with Randy in Charleston, West Virginia. Good morning, Randy. How are you?
Good morning. Hey, it's really a privilege to talk to Rich Miller there, Dr. Rich. And I used to work in radiation, and I had thyroid removal, both sides. They told me when they did the removal that it was from heavily cancer, which was the radiation. And now, you know, I probably ain't got very long to live now, you know. But I've been waiting and waiting for somebody to talk to about the condition. And this guy here, boy, I'll tell you what, he blew me away. Very, very intelligent person. And I ain't near on his level of intelligence because I hadn't had the opportunity, you know, to advance myself. But I know where he's coming from, and he can't make it out. That man's done some real study.
Randy, I'm sorry to hear about your health. Dr. Miller, what is it you'd like to know from Dr. Miller, Randy? What would you like to know?
Well, I got three things, and I'll give them to you, and I'll get off here so you can talk and I can listen to him. The first question, do you think we are headed for another nuclear war, and has it happened before? That's just questions. And how much time do you estimate does the United States have before we get like Japan? And do you know of any cure or advancement, cures for medicine that comes with the physical body?
Actually, I have an article that is coming out in Nexus Magazine this week. It just went to press on the miracle developments of fluorine waters. That's what they're called. They have exclusion zone water inside a buckyball, and it forms a microtubule that becomes a super antioxidant. What the first studies out of the Ukraine and then later Soviet Union, they were giving lethal doses of radiation to rats and then feeding them fluorine water with a 95% recovery. Now, the problem is we have that in shungite in natural sources up in Russia. Burke and Brita and all the others use activated charcoal. That's what we're talking about, is a type of charcoal carbon nanometer type structure that has water inside it that has been activated. And I haven't talked about exclusion zone water, but basically it's where you take hydrogen peroxide, H2O2, and you add a third hydrogen molecule to it, so it becomes H3O2. And that has such an unusual structure to it, it forms what's called cavitation. And that cavitation forms a type of weak force that is so strong, it's a type of cofusion where you're cavitating, going into the out of, if you will, like torus twister space. I need to give some data here, that concepts. The universe used to be thought of as with black holes and white holes. And that was Stephen Hawking. And then Roger Penrose at Princeton started to discuss torus twister space. In our body, we have cold fusion processes that probably occur at the level of ATP, adenosine triphosphate. If you look at that molecule, it is a quark gluon plasma. It is probably what Kirvan was suggesting in his Nobel Prize on the biological functions of man. Now, you could eat that as a food and increase your life force or juice, if you will, by increasing ATP. And while it may not give you a longer life, it will absolutely increase the quality of it. And when I tell you this, it is about the quality of life, not how long it is. If you can live in the moment, then of course there is no such thing as death. And my recommendation to you is that you watch that video, Astro City, because it might give you a visualization of something more. How do you feel about LSD therapy? I had a friend of mine once asked that. That's what they're doing for the terminally ill now. They are doing LSD therapy, and in fact, it helps move toward the next process of what I believe is waking up. So rather than look at yourself as half empty and that you're dying, look more in terms of how much more life you have ahead of you.
Randy, thank you for the call. I wanted to pick up on something that Randy mentioned, Dr. Miller, and that was nuclear war. The first part, you know, are we headed for another one? But this, the second part of that question was very interesting. Has it happened before? Because we're all familiar now with J. Robert Oppenheimer's sort of aside after the first nuclear detonation at Trinity in New Mexico, when he was asked, or he said, you know, or someone asked him, is this the first nuclear blast? And he said something about, you know, well, it's the first one, you know, in a very long time. In other words, he was hinting that there have been nuclear detonations in the distant past.
Yes, there probably has. I don't know about those kinds of things. My studies didn't include that part of it in that direction. However, history would belie, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah. And the idea of pillars of salt and that kind of metaphor. I don't think we're going to go into a nuclear fission war. I think we already have a neutron fusion bomb. I think that that bomb is being deployed everywhere. I'm writing about it right now. There are treaties that allow it, because it is clean in that sense, or that would suggest no forensics. When, in 9/11, when it happened, Building 7 fell down in slag. There was no debris. Now, the argument was that that was jet fuel that burned so hot as to slag concrete. Well, the physics says that you can't get anything that hot. There's only one thing on Earth that we know of that would slag concrete, and that's called a plasma. That's why Judy Wood and others are now suggesting that that was a false flag and that a new weapon was being deployed for getting a terrorism bill through Congress. Probably. They needed a body count. Now, who would do that? Well, collateral damage. The police chief that is on video from New York City just outraged because he watched a whole bunch of his people trying to save people, firemen were trying to save people, and lost their lives because of it. And the whole thing, he says, was demolition. However, thermite wouldn't get that hot either. I've worked with thermite. It won't get that hot. There's only one thing that would possibly do that. It would be a new Star Wars weapon working with a plasma. And we have that. I posted the patent. It came out of Carlsbad, California, and now at the National Ignition Facility in Livermore is a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger holding the target up in his eye. It's creepy that the public has no clue about this, and that there is no oversight, and that that is being deployed. Certainly Baghdad Airport, possibly Gaza. There are pictures of strange laser beam lights and then the explosion. Lasers are what set off the weapon. The weapon itself is built as a carbon fiber inside the steel. That means you could have an airplane disappear with no forensics, just like that.
Well, if you're suggesting that they whoever they are, I mean, that's we could talk for hours about who they are, but if they have this kind of technology.
But the aliens, who knows, terraforming us, I don't know. What I do know is that whoever is the king of Earth is not human, or certainly not representing what I would say are the high qualities of what we would associate with being human, like compassion, love, and, you know, empathy.
Well, if they have a weapon such as this at their disposal, this plasma weapon that maybe came out of you know, the Star Wars Defense Initiative, as that's what Dr. Judy Wood claims, I believe.
Well, she would also refer to John Hutchinson and the Hutchinson effect, which is a scalar forms working with microwave, not microwave, radar, excuse me. However, this is something else, and I know for a fact what it is. And the problem is the quality of control of control fusion is at 1.4 nanometers. What they do is they take 60 carbon atoms and they structure them in such a way they form what is called a soccer ball or a Buckminster fullerene or a buckyball. And because the spacing between one carbon atom and the other is wide enough that it will accept a water molecule to be trapped inside it, they would put exclusion zone water inside it, and now you have probably one of the most important antioxidants for removing heavy metals and or ionizing radiation from the body. However, if you instead put it, instead of putting exclusion zone water inside it, if you put deuterium or even tritium, which is not allowed by laws, treaty laws, deuterium is. Deuterium now becomes a fusion process with cavitation that MIT has developed under Mark LeClaire. And with that weapon, you know, the distant future could be a bio-API where geoengineering would drop that aerosol into everybody. Oh, wait, it already is. If you took a swab and wiped the inside of your lip and put it on a slide, there at 600 mics is that polymer that they're currently using in geo.
Wait a minute. Are you suggesting, Dr. Miller, that each of us could have essentially the ingredients for a neutron bomb inside each and every one of us?
I'm guessing that that's where it's at, yes.
My
and
word.
That would be then where the good Captain Kirk inhabited the bad Captain Kirk's body in an alternate universe and discovers his weapon where he brings on screen anyone he wants to and pushes a button and they disappear. Now, if we don't have that, that's where...
There's your rapture. There's your rapture, Dr. Miller.
I'm sorry?
There's your rapture.
Yeah, well, maybe... You know, what is that spontaneous combustion where you consume yourself? That was talked about as the Tapasia ritual, trial by fire. Good luck with that.
All right, let's go. Good luck indeed. Let's go to the wild card line. Eric is in Boise, Idaho. Eric, climb aboard and hold on tight.
Hey, wow, Dr. Miller. I guess us three are tres hombres. Hey, I just want to say that is some amazing stuff. I think we should actually talk, but there's no expression of the one eternal moment in the now. I mean, if you look at past, present, and future, they're just like one gigantic eternal moment in the ever constant now, and we exist on that plane, even though we are in these physical bodies. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. It is so amazing that you cover so many subjects at once. I'm really interested in corresponding with you actually, but anyway, in the last 100 years, if you look at consciousness and how all this technology has manifested all this magic at our fingertips, you were talking about Crowley. We won't talk about Crowley. That's a whole other subject. But people like him and different people around the turn of the century were expanding their consciousness, and people associated with science and things and inventions manifested because consciousness is all one. Well. Right now, what we're seeing is dysfunction of the ego at the government level globally. The dysfunction of the ego is the device suffice the basic need tenfold for humanity. We have all the devices and technology we'll ever need to survive humanity. Now, what the problem is if all the energies, innovation, and research go into our survival as human beings, then all these different energies of destruction once we stop putting our energies into that, everything will balance out. And let's just say, you know, the part on the earth that needs water, well, the rain will come to it.
I'm reminded of Mars Attacks when Jack Nicholson says, "Why can't we all just get along?" And the alien has a tear in his eye and offers his hand and laughs.
All right, Eric, thank you for the call. Let's say hello to, is it Lois? First-time caller from Clearwater, Florida. Hello, Lois.
Or is it? And Mr. Skerritt, and thank you so much for this fascinating conversation. And on Mars Attacks, gotcha. My question is, what piqued this question, inspired this question, was, I paraphrase, you said something to the effect of our belief systems limit our experiences or our reality.
That is correct.
Now, due to my personal reality, I'm going to an experience as I've had. I have a question, and I'm not a psychologist or a scientist, so bear with me on the verbiage. But I have an idea that generally the conscious mind and the unconscious mind cannot simultaneously operate. Therefore, I feel that sometimes we have experiences in what I would call, for lack of a better word, unconscious experiences that we actually do, there are part of our reality, but as then later you won't remember it. For instance, like I've had experiences where I've seen something extraordinary or remarkable and while I was in a group of people. An hour later, no one else remembers it. So when you said that the belief system limits our experience, that really spoke to me. But I was wondering, can you expound for a minute on the conscious and unconscious minds? And
sure.
Is this something you train yourself to have simultaneously operate?
Great comment, Lois. Let's begin the conversation, and then we'll take a break here shortly. So, and then we'll get you to hold on, Lois, and we'll get the rest of the answer after the break. Go ahead, Dr. Miller.
Okay, well, that is what magic calls knowledge and conversation. That is when you talk to your holy guardian angel. Now, we all of us have internal dialogue. And during our sleep, we have dreams. And our subconscious speaks to us in emotions, not things. And that's why dreams are best understood in terms of your relationship to the feelings associated with them, not what actually happened in the dream itself. That's Jungian and imaginal psychology. And what you're trying to do is find a dialogue place where the two of you are at one. That is what Maslow calls self-realization.
Where all right, Dr. Miller, hold on. We'll just stay put. We'll come back, and we'll get the rest of that answer for Lois in Clearwater, Florida. More of my conversation with Dr. Richard Allen Miller and your calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us.